Welcome back to the Author Conversations Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, here with my colleague, Johnny.
Hello.
And today we're on part two of discussing Inside the Texas Chicken Ranch, which is what The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas is based on. Just to recap, we're discussing the little brothel in LaGrange, Texas that made big waves both locally and nationally. If you haven't listened to part one, please go do so now to catch up. And just as a reminder, today's podcast is rated E, not for everyone.
Rated E for explicit.
Yes. All right, Johnny, you want to take it away?
Yeah. So when we left off, we talked about the beginning of the downfall for both the Chicken Ranch and the Wagon Wheel, which if you missed it, go back and listen because Jenny gave a great description of the Wagon Wheel. The downfall would be a prostitute who worked at both places. The prostitute who is called Mary Jane.
One last dance of Mary Jane.
First worked at Wagon Wheel, and while there, decided to test the boundaries of that establishment. First, she starts dealing drugs out of the Wagon Wheel, and is told in no uncertain terms to hit the road. So where do you think she ended up next?
I can only guess. The Texas Chicken Ranch.
Yep. We haven't made a chicken noise yet. I think we had. So Mary Jane pulls the same crap at the Chicken Ranch. And Miss Edna kicks her out. And Jenny, it was not the respective sheriffs that shut the houses down over drug trade. You see, Mary Jane liked to brag about people she knew and those in law enforcement she knew or slept with. A lot of prostitutes did this. But not all of them were like Mary Jane. You see, Mary Jane was an informant to an unnamed DPS intelligence officer, which stands for Department of Public Service. Which is kind of like, was there state troopers or something like that back then? So this DPS officer tried to get Miss Edna to hire Mary Jane back. And Miss Edna said, no way, I'm not doing that. And she would not agree to bring a Mary Jane back on. She said she ran a clean establishment. I mean, apart from the, you know, illegal sex trade that's going on there. Well, the DPS fella, he got his ire up. He felt disrespected. I think maybe he should have reined his informant in since she's the one causing the problems. Regardless, he decided it was time for these establishments to shut that door, shut those doors of those brothels, bordellos, whatever you want to call them. The author did make note, that in the 70s, Texas had changed from the way it was back in the Chicken Ranch's heyday. Texas was becoming more modern, industrialized. The author said the place had become a giant powder keg, just waiting for someone willing to light the spark. In 1971, the AP Press did a story on the sex industry in Texas. That's the Associated Press. And a magazine called Men and Adventure decided to investigate. So I have apparently a little section to read because you got your book over there. So it's not a section to read. Just that 176 in the book is where this picture of this men's magazine is. And it basically looks like the National Enquirer or something. That
the picture of Sindler?
Yeah, page 176. You don't have that on 176?
Do we have different books?
I have the 50th anniversary edition.
Oh, okay.
So that might be what that is. So there are two versions of the book, everybody. So make sure you get the newer version if you buy the book. So, but the pictures are kind of fantastical on it, too. I don't think they're from the actual Chicken Ranch. And I'll show you this picture and you'll be able to see it. Exactly what I'm talking about. So the AP wasn't too, that's it right there. So the AP wasn't too bad, but the article in the men's magazine was pretty damaging. The piece accused Chicken Ranch and its workers of being drug dealers and thieves and even claimed it was so secret the Texas Rangers could not find them, which we know is not the case because even the FBI knew about it. Mind you, on the cover of this magazine, there is also a story about zombies chasing a guy in a place called the Land of the Walking Dead. Pure yellow journalism. Sensationalism is what we might call it. Speaking of yellow journalism, this brings us to Marvin Zindler.
Oh, Marvin Zindler.
I feel like there's a lot of people who would like to have punched Marvin Zindler.
Yeah, and especially before he had his extensive plastic surgery, his face was pretty punchable.
even afterwards, like the last picture they have of him with like the those 70s sunglasses on and like there's a
the gray hair.
Yeah. Which there's a great story later about what happens with the hair.
Yes.
But you'll, I don't have it in the podcast. You'll have to read in the book. But yeah, so this guy, he liked to sensationalize things. We all know someone who likes to promote themselves nonstop too. They think they are God's gift not only to women but to everyone. And that was this guy. He enlisted in the service in the military during World War II, but didn't even make it past basic training because of health issues. But he decided to become an auxiliary officer, which is kind of like a volunteer police officer, during the war, and then he worked for a newspaper sensationalizing stories. He would do things like interview people in devastating accidents. As soon as something bad happened to him, put the mic right in their face.
I think at one point he even poured ketchup
on
somebody to make the photo look like they were more injured than they actually were.
I mean, the person's laying there wanting help, and he's, you know,
he's just pouring ketchup on them.
I'm hoping he used Hunt's, not Heinz, because I'm a Heinz guy. There's no reason to waste Heinz. So he would often get to accident scenes and crime scenes well before the police. You know why? Because he would ride around in his car, and he had, think about how expensive it was back then to have all these different police bands and stuff with radio just to see where things were happening at, race over there to get what he needed. So Marvin would also do things, like you said, with the ketchup, to sensationalize his photos. Marvin would spend time again in law enforcement and would call the media if he was about to bust someone or take down a place. He would circle the block and wait for a news crew to arrive. Marvin worked consumer affairs and would go after businesses that mistreated their customers by lying to them, or if they had done something that could shut them down by not hold, if the business didn't hold their end of the bargain. But he would jump the gun a couple of times on that too. He also took down X-rated theaters. He would make a big show to the media about this as well. There's a picture of Marvin in the book with a, I guess, a photo of a naked woman, because all you see is her face and the rest of it's covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy that this is the kind of stuff people, well, they still do today. What am I talking about?
Yeah, they sure do.
Yeah, he's, but he, I guess maybe he was the original social, if it had social media back then, he would be like TMZ and everything, so. He's maybe the original TMZ, maybe.
It's an accurate description, I guess.
Yeah, I just, you know, he's a real creepy guy. So one day, he pulled the trigger, so to say, a bit too quick on a business who did nothing wrong. A lawsuit occurs, and that, along with many, many complaints about him from the area's businesses, resulted in Marvin being shown the door, but he lands on his feet again, working as a consumer affair reporter at a TV station. Also wanted to add that Marvin was not what you would call a handsome man. Quote the movie Waterboy. During a time when it could be scandalous to do so, he had cosmetic surgery on his nose and chin. He did look like a different person after all these surgeries.
He did.
Completely different.
I wouldn't say he was more handsome, though.
At least he got a chin.
He did.
I've never seen anybody.
So the before and after photos are in the book. So you can buy the book to see how he looked.
I'll give you an idea. Did you ever watch DuckTales?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the maid? I forgot what her name was. Mrs. Duckworth or something?
Mm-hmm.
Was that playoff Butterworth? Anyway, so Mrs. Duckworth, she just, you know, she had no chin. Her mouth just went straight down to her neck.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, I think. I mean, he wasn't fat. It wasn't like a fat chin.
Right, he was actually just pretty skinny.
No chin.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, it's a weird shape.
So how did old Marv get involved with the chicken ranch? Well, first of all, let me say that Marvin would do reporting as a consumer's affairs reporter for KTRK. He would read health inspector reports weekly on the air. He would go after businesses for small complaints. He knew businesses hated him and did not care. Marvin is also another one who liberally seems to use the N-word a lot. So when Marvin starts to get involved with the chicken ranch, we remember Mary Jane, who was a prostitute fired by both the wagon wheel and the chicken ranch. And that DPS officer, who tried to get Miss Anna to hire her back, he was good on his vengeance and started planting seeds in the heads of his superiors. And that worked up to the Criminal Intelligence Office in Houston.
Dun, dun, dun.
The head of that office, Captain Reed, took a major interest and would get an assistant district attorney involved too. So an investigation begins, a real investigation. DPS agents even sit across from the chicken ranch observing the number of vehicles coming in and out. Well, someone, probably Miss Edna, called the deputies. A patrol car came out, went with the driver of the chicken ranch, then came back down. The deputy blocks the DPS agent's patrol car and shined a big spotlight, you know, the spotlights on the side of the police cars, into their car. He then radios Sheriff Big Jim, and Big Jim comes out and basically ran these guys off. So at this time, and even during these events, which will transpire later, the ranch fell under the jurisdiction of the sheriff's office. It's a local matter. There are misdemeanors that are happening out there, not felonies and things of that nature. So not the DPS, not the Texas Rangers, or any state organization or federal organization had jurisdiction. In essence, as of now, Big Jim was calling the shots as to what happens to the chicken ranch. Late 1972, a new Texas Attorney General was elected. He set up an organized crime task force. One of his assistant AGs warned him about the type of people he would go after. The same assistant general AG, Attorney General, would later be involved in bringing the ranch down. His name was Tim James. Now, James didn't think a country whorehouse was a big deal until Captain Reed of the Houston DPS office picked up the phone with James in the room and called the ranch. Miss Edna answered. Captain Reed told her he was bringing a hunting party nearby, gave her the number of guests, and asked if she had enough girls for his 12 hunting buddies. Miss Edna said, one night she will have 10, the next 11. The blatant casualness shocked the AAG James. That's again, Assistant Attorney General. He tries in vain to get other agencies to help investigate and district attorneys to take up the case against the ranch, but to no avail. They don't want to touch it. Plus, it might hurt them because they've probably been out there.
Yep.
So he decides to investigate on his own and brought in another assistant attorney general named Herb Hancock, who's in this quite a bit. Old, did you ever see Tommy Boy?
Yes.
That's who we thought was the who signed the Declaration of Independence first. Herb Hancock.
Herb Hancock.
Hancock would sit out and observe the cars going in or out. But no matter what observations or investigations Hancock made, neither he nor the Texas Attorney General could get a local prosecutor to take the case. Again, because they probably went out there.
Mm-hmm. And if they didn't go out there, they were definitely using the services.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the intelligence network.
Yep.
So all, remember, all of them know about the ranch. It's an open secret. And politicians local and statewide would visit. So the case gets closed down. But Hancock has an ace, so to speak, in his pocket, and that's old Marvin Zindler. Hancock thinks if he can get Marvin to open a journalistic investigation, he will be able to get public support behind prosecuting the ranch. Hancock meets with Marvin, but Marvin is not as interested as Hancock thought he would or should be. But Marvin was not just not interested. He said hell no to it.
Mm-hmm.
Hancock didn't give up, and whenever he would see Marvin on social occasions at a club or something of that nature, he would bring it up again. He then accused Marvin of doing what Marvin accused law enforcement of doing, sitting on his hands and doing nothing. This got the better of Marvin. He's kind of full of himself. And he decided to do something. With some evidence provided in a way to him, kind of a sketchy way to him by the
right.
DPS, Department of Public Services, Marvin took the story to his bosses and got a green light. This is where it kind of gets interesting to me. And it's already interesting, but it gets more interesting. Now, Marvin knew this would be an undercover investigation, and he would not go in himself to the chicken ranch. Instead, he sent a cameraman, another news producer named Larry Connors, and Connors also brought a friend along with him called the Yankee. Judy, how do you convince your friend that's in town to, like, hey, we're going on this investigation. Would you like to go to the whorehouse we're trying to shut down with me?
I feel like there's probably not much convincing at that time. You want to go to the whorehouse?
Yeah, but if you're, like, saying we're going there to try to bring it down, I mean, maybe he was with him to try to, like, because he's like, hey, I need some backup when I go in there or something. So when the three reached the ranch, the cameraman stayed in the van to shoot footage from inside, well, from inside the van, not inside the whorehouse,
right.
While Connors and the Yankee went in. Connors was expected to capture footage from inside the ranch, and at the beginning of the investigation was promised two things. Spy cameras that were inconspicuous. And also a car that wouldn't get noticed. Well, they got an old yellow van, and Connors had to use a 35mm film camera with a big lens.
It's not noticeable at all.
Is that a camera in your pocket? Or, you know? Well, yes, it is. I'm also happy to see you, but which he concealed in a jacket pocket, and it was hot in Texas at this time of year. So that didn't look out of place at all. When they entered the ranch and went to the parlor, which is the ring where you pick out a girl. Connors would have to sneak the lens out of his pocket and snap pics. Jenny, you and I have both been photographers. You still are. And we know that cameras make a noise, especially those old cameras.
They sure do.
Thankfully for him and the Yankee, they both had fed money into the overpriced jukebox, which apparently dried out the clicks. Oh, God. But he needed more than watching a guy make eye contact with a woman. That's what they were doing now. They were just seeing the guys go in, talk to the lady, ask him to dance mm-hmm. before they went back and did the deed. He needed more concrete evidence.
So how does one get concrete evidence?
Well, Connors decided to, as he said, take one for the team. He said the girls were provocative looking in lingerie. So in other words, he was getting excited about it, is what I think. He's like, well, I got to do my job. Apparently, he had a thing for brunettes, too, because as he said, a cute brunette with a nice figure is who he picked out, and they danced. Mm-hmm. Bumping uglies, that kind of thing. So in case people don't understand what we're saying here. The way he described the girls makes me think he did not mind taking one for the team at all.
Again, I don't think it was hard to convince anyone to go on the stakeout.
Except for the guy in the van. He was in the van and he is overheating in this Texas weather.
Right.
He strips down to his underwear. And at some point, two cowboys come by and see him, and he just stays still, hoping they'll think he passed out. I don't know how they didn't see, like, the big-ass, you know, camera with him. But whatever. I guess they were like, you know, we got other things on our mind.
Right.
So after Connors was done being a good team player, he returned to the parlor and continued to try to snap photos. Idiot. You got what you needed.
Well, I think he snapped photos in the room as well. She like stepped out for a minute.
Yeah.
And he like snapped a few photos when she was gone. And then then they did the deed.
But the thing is like his words against everybody else's.
Right.
You know what I mean? How do you know that happened? He didn't get pictures of the actual act.
True. Because what's he going to do? Take a picture of his own butt?
I think what we're going to see later on is like exactly people's brashness.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of got it. Is really what undid it, I think. So he returns to the parlor, continue to try to snap photos, but he was noticed, if you can believe it. A girl asked him what he was doing, and he claimed he wanted to pay for a photo with the girls and asked if that was allowed. The girl said they had to ask Miss Edna, who had already suspected them of not being above board.
I think they were a little fidgety and weird to begin with.
Yeah, and they spent a lot of time at the bar by themselves mm-hmm. and stuff, and watching other people who came in after them get girls.
Right.
And, you know, he might have, but it wasn't in the book. I don't think the Yankee ever went back. But he might have.
He might have. He probably did.
So Miss Edna is already suspecting these guys of not being above board, and word spreads about the camera as Connors and the Yankee decide to run to the van. The Yankee and Connors jump into the van where the underwear-clad cameraman was screaming for them to hurry up and drive because a crowd of girls and mostly pissed off cowboys gather on the ranch's porch. The whole idea of this is like insane.
Yep. And the pissed off cowboys, they all have guns because they're cowboys in Texas.
Yeah, I would assume they did.
I think, doesn't it say that in the book?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All the guns are like pointed at the van.
They were serious about protecting their whorehouse, man, because it is the best little whorehouse in Texas. So Connor, like in a bad horror movie, couldn't find the keys. Then when he found the keys, couldn't find the ignition. But in the confusion of the moment, the cameraman accidentally turned his camera light on, which flashed out of the van like a light from heaven or something. And it allowed Connors to find the ignition then when he had light. It's just so ridiculous. Connors takes off to the main highway where a deputy's car passes him on the way to the ranch. The deputies got called and they were coming out to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. The three make it to the wagon wheel, Yankee, Connors, and the cameraman. And they were going to go in and do the same thing there, but they're like, I've had enough of this shit. I'm done with it.
I mean, you have like 20 cowboys pointing guns at you. I feel like maybe take a break.
Are you picturing like Yosemite Sam all the time for some reason?
No. I want to say I wish I knew.
I know what cowboys look like. I've been around cowboys. You know what I mean? Or people who pretend to be cowboys, at least.
Farmers. maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've visited, you know, my brother out in Texas a couple of times, mm-hmm. and, you know, different stores you go to, you meet him and stuff. And but for some reason, I still picture Yosemite Sam.
So you're picturing Yosemite Sam.
I'm picturing Yosemite Sam. Like, anyway, more than once, the term "the shit hit the fan" is used after this. Mm-hmm. So the story comes to light, and here's how it did. So before the story ran on the news, Omar went in to interview Big Jim. And this is kind of his lack of hubris, or whatever you call it, his lack of being trying to cover it up or anything, is what I really think started to bring it down. Because the sheriff didn't try to hide a thing. He openly admitted to knowing the Chicken Ranch was a brothel. Mm-hmm. In fact, when Marvin asked Big Jim how long it was in operation, the sheriff tells him, "It was there before I was born. It was there when I was a little boy. It was there when I was a deputy sheriff, and it's still there. It don't give nobody any trouble." Marvin and Big Jim actually have a pleasant conversation about the Chicken Ranch until Marvin insinuates that the brothel may be linked to organized crime. This set Big Jim off. Big Jim firmly, in so many words, told Marvin that that was not the case, but Marv kept pushing. After a bit of back and forth, Marvin asked the sheriff, "What if the state finds out that the money coming into the ranch is going to more organized crime?" The sheriff says, "If that's the case, let them shut it down," and that he knows that there is no kind of money like that going out. Remember, Big Jim and Miss Edna worked hard to keep the Chicken Ranch as legal as you can, being a bordello and a brothel, a den of sin of the carnal nature.
Yeah, I think, like, at one point Edna says that. She's like, mm-hmm. if you don't have a problem with sin, we're good, because we're all about the sin and not the illegal activities.
Yeah, even though it's illegal.
Even though it's legal.
That's why important elections and local elections are really important, because that's where you change laws and things.
Yeah.
And get things done. It's not like on the federal level and things of this nature. You're really supposed to, politics are supposed to be local. Right. In this case, I mean, maybe they could have made that legal there or something, you know. Even if it was a state law, I mean, maybe change it in the state house. I'm sure some of the reps and senators would have done that.
I bet they would have had a big investment in keeping the Chicken Ranch around.
Oh, yeah. Marvin kept going, asking Jim, Big Jim, about shutting down the ranch, and the sheriff said it would only take one phone call. Marvin asked the sheriff why he hasn't made the call to shut it down, and Big Jim, I imagine trying not to strangle Marvin, says, "You hard of hearing, boy? Because as I said, it has been there since when I was a little boy. It gives nobody any trouble. The majority of my constituents want it. And as much as there has been no trouble out there, I haven't shut it down. I would rather have them out there than in the back alleys or over in," and he uses a racial slur,
right,
"town, spreading venereal diseases. We don't have no venereal diseases at the Chicken Ranch. Those girls are examined once a week by a local doctor in downtown LaGrange." Next, they go to confront Miss Edna. So Mr. Take One for the Team Connors is the one who's going to interview her. She opens the door, tells Connors she wants him to leave. Connors ignores her and asks what kind of operation she's operating here. And she again says it's a boarding house. Again, Connors pushes and pushes. Miss Edna tells him he knows... tells him she knows what is here, and when or he tells her he knows what's here, and when he asks about who is making the money, meaning is there any organized crime connection, she says she was the only one involved with the money and those in the house making the money. Connors then asks about the payoffs. Miss Edna, for whatever reason, says certainly the federal government, they get their pint of blood for every quart you get. And I think that means she's somehow paying taxes.
Right.
Because she's a boarding house.
Right.
Marvin interviews the sheriff in Austin County, Sheriff Maddox, where the brothel, the Wagon Wheel, is located. The sheriff seems pretty friendly again at first, but when asked about organized crime or if he ever took any payouts, he firmly says no, and like Big Jim, pretty much explains how it works. But Marvin just could not believe for so long there had been this deal between the brothels and rural county sheriffs. Beyond that, he couldn't fathom that the DPS and the Texas Rangers view them as harmless and turn a blind eye to the prostitution. Marvin truly believed he had uncovered, as the authorities say, a dangerous nest of vipers deep in the heart of Texas. A little peewee there. You got something?
Yeah, just kind of, I know we talked about this already, but when he was investigating her, she was saying that she had donated that $10,000 to the hospital. So she's like, so that's where some of the money's going. And Connors was obviously upset about it, and he says, he makes that whorehouse sound like a damn nonprofit county recreational facility.
Yes. It's got a YMCA yeah. in the back.
Or in the front.
Oh, wait. There's so many ways you can get hit with that, that we're just going to let that lie. So, man, we're mature.
That's not a word I would use.
Oh, I was being sarcastic, wasn't I? I'm a very immature 40 years old. The plan was for the following Monday, Marvin would interview Texas Governor Dolph Briscoe. Dolph. Which sounds like a made-up name.
It sounds like a meat.
Dolph Brisket.
Having that Dolph Briscoe tonight.
Briscoe Brisket. Then come back to the news station for the 6 p.m. news and air the footage from the ranch, and then the governor's interview would be at 10 that night. Stay tuned at 10 o'clock for, you know, mm-hmm. follow up with the governor. When Marvin interviews the governor, he had already interviewed Attorney General Hill and DPS Colonel Spear, who's kind of the head of the DPS, mm-hmm. Department of Public Service. But the governor is blindsided by the questions. Or, and he's asked if he's, you know, there's brothels operating illegally in the state. What may be more surprising, though, than him getting blindsided is the fact that he was blindsided. Actually, that is surprising because A.G. Hill or Colonel Spear could have let the governor know what this reporter is going to want. I'm sure they knew he was coming.
Right.
Marvin to interview him. The governor says, no, I don't know about it. And when Marvin asked what he will do about the brothels, the governor said, Marvin, we are going to close it up. This statement's what we call a step out. He did not have, under state law, the authority to do this. Again, it was only local law enforcement that could. The governor was left scrambling and would call a meeting for Tuesday, the next day.
He had to call a war room meeting. A
war room meeting.
About the brothels.
So stupid. But no one wanted to attend the meeting, let alone deal with the chicken ranch. After the story aired, LaGrange is swarmed with media. Even with this scrutiny, the public still seemed to support the ranch. There was even a petition with hundreds of signatures supporting the ranch. Fayette County Attorney Dan Beck was resolute that since no one in the county ever raised any objections to the ranch, he would do nothing about it until a complaint is filed. Big Jim even extols the so-called virtues, which you talked about earlier, about thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. she invested into the community, Miss Edna. This is now a full-blown scandal, Jenny. KTKR, even though the community of LaGrange is firmly behind the ranch, keeps airing stories and even showing license plates. We still got to go back to that Tuesday meeting, but talking about all this is funny, too. Calls come into the station, some threatening and some pleading not to show their cars on TV. Some of them even said that their brother was driving the car that day, and that's why their license plate might be on the camera.
My car got stolen, and they took it to the brothel.
Yeah. It's time to own up, bud.
And, you then know? And then they returned the car after that, of course, once they were done.
Yeah.
That's why I'm still driving it.
It's crazy to me that someone would think that was actually believable. Right. Bad thing is, what if like one of them at least out of all of them had to be true? You know what I mean? But then the brother's in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Which in this case, I'd be like, yeah, sorry, bud. this is on you. You're the one who went out there. So with all this going on, though, almost no other station, at least locally, because it would get national, was reporting on the story. They knew there was no organized crime, and they would roll their eyes when Connors or Marvin brought it up to them. And those outlets figured if everyone knew about the chicken ranch, what's the problem? Remember, famous people, including at least one U.S. president, have used the services of the ranch. But other media from near and far would be intrigued about what was happening in this Texas county. When Miss Edna would grant other interviews, she would claim that KTKR and others like them have a hard time confusing crime, like you said earlier, with sin. She said there were no drinks served there, no white slavery or sex trafficking, and no children involved. She then makes a statement, if anyone was forced to do something that would be different, that would be different, rather. We know that is not the case, because in an earlier interview, Miss Edna, who was asked what the youngest customer would be, and she said 18, mm-hmm. and the oldest would be in their 80s.
Right.
She was asked, what if a girl didn't want to entertain someone so old? Miss Edna said she was in the wrong business then. I take that to mean you have to find another brothel if you don't want to give Grandpa Jones a good time.
Yeah, but I don't think that's her forcing anyone to do it. She just, you know, like the girls just have to know what they're getting into, which I would assume you should know if you're working in a whorehouse.
Yeah, but I mean,
you can't pick and choose who your clients are going to be.
Kind of feel like you should be able to.
I'm sure that there's the ability to say no if you don't feel right, but I feel like if you work in a whorehouse, especially during this time.
I mean, yeah, that could be the case. I don't know.
I mean, I equate it to like a masseuse. A masseuse can't really pick and choose like what clients are going to come in. You know, you might have like a really in shape guy that waxes all his body, and then you might have like an 80-year-old man who's covered in fur like a monkey. And you have to service both of them.
Service is a different connotation for most masseuses. We want to point that out. If you're a massage therapist, we do not think that you should be working at the Chicken Ranch. Also, this is probably a good time to point out that any opinions expressed here are the opinions of Jenny and Johnny individually and not necessarily those of Arcadia or the author. We probably should have done that at the beginning of the first one.
That's fair.
But you know who's really on high alert right now? All the state politicians mm-hmm. and government officials who patronized the ranch. That Tuesday meeting that was called started out as finding a way to get Governor Briscoe out of this mess he got himself into. So you have a DPS official who lied about the ranch. And, you know, he has a Stetson cowboy hat he wears as a Christmas gift from Miss Edna. State Senator William Patman, who represents Fayette County and LaGrange, where the ranch is located, he denied knowing about it. And when he was pressed, he just kept lying. There comes the cops to shut down the ranch, in case you can't hear in the background. But there was someone dead set against the ranch, Jenny. A real party downer type of person named Janie. Not Jenny, but Janie.
Janie,
who also happened to be the governor's wife. I may agree with her on some issues, but she does seem like she is that person at a gathering who tells you why everyone at the party is going to hell, but then gossips about people later, saying, I'm only telling you this so you can pray for so-and-so. Like, that kind of person. She was there when Marvin interviewed the governor. And one person close to the situation was sure the governor caught hell about the ranch operating illegally and most likely wouldn't stop raising hell. She wouldn't stop raising hell until something was done. In the meeting, Governor Briscoe is quizzed. And he quizzes the state's top two lawmen, Colonel Spear and A.G. Hill, about if there was enough evidence to close it down, and if so, can the state do it? They were very wishy-washy with their answers. Finally, the governor asked the Secretary of State, Mark White, for his opinion. And Mark White, to his credit, kind of brings everything down to where they come up with a plan. He made a joke about not attending the University of Texas or Texas A&M, two colleges whose students frequented the ranch. You can learn more about that in part one. So he knew nothing about the ranch, which cut the tension. He said, since I didn't go to one of those two universities, I don't know anything about it. I went to a university somewhere else, and I'm a good boy. This allowed Governor Briscoe to think for a moment when the tensions dies down. And he finally said to Colonel Spear that the law must be enforced. Colonel Spear made a call to Big Jim to tell him the governor wanted it shut it down. But Big Jim was not on board with the idea. His constituents still supported the chicken ranch and Miss Edna. Colonel Spear then said he would station state troopers outside the ranch and report every license plate that arrived. This may have been an empty threat, as there would be a good chance state legislatures would be among those being filmed.
Right.
I kind of feel like Miss Edna had this entire town under her spell.
She definitely did. She definitely did.
I mean, if you're like given so, because what we said in the first part of this podcast, part one, money makes a lot of things get forgot about.
Mm-hmm.
Even a whole town can forget about it.
You have to think though that it's not just money. In her case, she has a lot of secrets under her belt.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
that's more valuable than money.
It's absolutely more valuable than money. You don't want people to know, not just about her, like who's frequenting her brothel, but I'm sure that they're telling the girls all sorts of things, you know, when they're not in their right mind.
You know, you're right. 100%. People like to talk. When people think they have something to brag about, mm-hmm. for some reason they feel like they have to do it to anybody who's listening. In this case, the girls are getting paid to listen and they want that information.
Especially, you know, guys that are frequenting, you can only imagine they're like kind of macho-y type guys that are, you know, trying to show off to these cute little dainty ladies.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's all sorts of secrets in her hair.
Yeah. In her hair. Ah. So more reporters started to arrive at the ranch. The scandal was getting bigger and bigger, threatening to draw more of those who enjoy the ranch's services into the fray. Colonel Spear made a suggestion out of the blue to the governor. He suggested Governor Briscoe call Big Jim himself. The governor called Big Jim and told him everything that was going on was just too much, and they needed to shut it down. Big Jim tried to stall for time, claiming there was a lot of furniture at the ranch to move out, and there's the issue of moving the girls out so they're not homeless. Big Jim suggested just to let it stay open for a couple more weeks to let everything taper off. It might have. I don't think it would be just a couple of weeks. It might have been a month or two.
Right.
I mean, well, if Miss Janie, the governor's wife, would let it go. I don't know if that would happen. Janie Briscoe. But the governor was resolute in his decision and told Jim he was going to have to shut it down, which Jim tiredly replied, okay. Because Jim's, at this point, tired of the crap. Well, as we later find out, his brother dies, too, unexpectedly.
Right.
So he has a lot going on. Governor Briscoe himself admitted that he was waiting for someone to tell him that he did not have the authority to close down the ranch. But no one ever did. Colonel Spear would make a phone call to Sheriff Maddox in Austin County, ordering him to close the wagon wheel as well. So both get shuttered. Miss Edna took the call from Big Jim and let her girls know what was happening. Most of the girls left that night. And this remember I said something was weird about the girls thing?
Mm-hmm.
This was weird to me. So most left that night. Miss Edna had this to say about two girls who stayed. And it's on page 224. I don't know if you remembered.
Yeah, I do.
The story.
Yeah. I think you and I might have different viewpoints of this story, though.
I mean, I guess the wording makes me uncomfortable with it. Which, I mean, not that I get offended by words easily. I'm like the last person that would get offended by words. But when it comes to using this in this context, it's a little creepy to me. So the news hit Miss Edna like a ton of bricks. She sent a few customers there that night home and then called the girls together and told them the story. Most of the women packed their bags at night and left by morning. One or two little girls, that's the part I felt weird. They were young, but they were not kids. I got tickled with them. They came in and got my lap and put their arms around my shoulders and neck and everything. I had to kind of grin, Miss Edna said, smiling at the bittersweet memory. It was sweet of them, you know. They had been there long enough where I was family to them. Those little girls I'll remember forever. That was just kind of weird. You know what I mean? Because, you know, the first part, I think you brought up to like 18, you're kind of still, you're an adult, but you're kind of still a kid.
Right.
So it's like, I feel like she takes advantage of those kind of situations. Are they old enough to make their own decisions when they're 18? Yeah.
I mean, she might.
Some of them are probably from hard backgrounds.
Too, yeah.
Bad backgrounds, but I don't know. It just kind of feels like, because we know Miss Edna will take advantage of a situation.
Right.
Was she taking advantage of their age and their, you know,
naivety?
Yeah, they're very naive, probably. So right. That part was kind of weird to me. But
see, I took that as a sweet moment. Like she had to shut it down, and then like the youngest girls who probably saw her kind of as a mother figure, like essentially just like climbed into her lap so that they could all comfort each other. I was like, that's a nice moment.
Yeah, because moms like to pimp out their kids.
So. Listen, we know a few famous celebrities who probably did.
Oh, whoa. There's, now I hope, I'm going to see if we have a book about it, because I really want to do a book about, like, basically, like, the famous actors and actresses, like, that came out of, like, the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and how their family was actually involved in, like, you know, they seemed to be counterculture.
Yeah.
But it was, like, the idea of the government to insert the counterculture movement, because their families were, like, high up in the military or mm-hmm. powerful political office. Like, I hope. I'm going to try to see if we have a book about that. If not, I'm going to beg somebody, maybe Brian Clune, if he's listening, yeah. to co-write a book about this, because I really want to get into that.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't take anything at face value anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
kind of jumping back in with them shutting the chicken ranch down. Earlier in the book, they kind of had another shutdown where they were like, you have to close down. Everybody's upset. I think this is when the Puritans showed up.
Yeah.
And what she did.
When the Mayflower landed in the Grange.
Yes. what Edna did was she put the closed sign on the front, but allowed people to still come in through the back door. Mature. See?
<Yeah.
laughs> But that's what I was waiting for when I was reading. I was like, surely this can't be it. This can't be the end of the story. Like, she's... The back door's still open, right? But then all the girls left, and...
Yeah. Maybe the girls saw it coming more than she did.
Maybe.
Because this place had been in business since the 1840s.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy.
So through everything, Miss Edna didn't believe it was going to actually shut down or be closed. It had been open in some former fashion, like I said, since the 1840s. That night the ranch closed, Miss Edna pondered what she would do next. Miss Edna could have used her extensive list of clients who did not want to come, who did not want their dalliances to come to life. She could have blackmailed them, a form of extortion, but she didn't. She could have brought down a lot of hypocrites with her. She didn't. Support also started to wane in the community. A number of those who had signed the petition to support the ranch began asking for their names to be taken off. Edna closed up the house and moved into town. To men in all stages and walks of life who knew about the lore of the ranch, it seemed unfathomable that it was closed. People would drive out to the ranch hoping it was open. Those trips were in vain. Marvin Zindler, he got more scorn than praise for his part in closing down the ranch. One night on the news, he caused another commotion by claiming that the ranch had reopened. A visit by the Texas Rangers proved this was not the case. The legendary Chicken Ranch no longer existed. Edna would open up a club or a dinner or restaurant later called the Chicken Ranch. Not the same. So this is not the end of the story. If you wonder what happened to Big Jim, Marvin, Connor, Spear, Miss Edna especially, I encourage you to buy the book. Author Jamie Lynn Blash goes into deeper detail about this story. Before, during, and after Miss Edna's tenure, there are stories we didn't want to tell on here on the podcast, which kind of gives you an idea of what could be in the book.
Yep.
Make sure you get the revised, expanded, and updated version of the book. I think it's basically the 50th anniversary of the ranch getting shut down.
Right.
Edition of the book. And the book, again, is Inside the Texas Chicken Ranch. If for nothing else than to read about an encounter in LaGrange after all this happened between Marvin and Sheriff Big Jim, because that's a great read right there.
It's such a great scene.
Such a great scene. But we're already 42 minutes into part two, so we're not going to go into that.
I do want to make one mention of after the chicken ranch shut down and was sold. It was bought by, I believe, a family. And one of the kids was in school telling everybody that her daddy had just bought the chicken ranch.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe CPS got called on her parents.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want your kid going to school saying that your mom or daddy's running a whorehouse.
Right.
Although today it might just be looked at as something, you know, whatever you want to do, that's great. So that's the story of the chicken ranch. There was some ickiness, I feel, from Miss Edna and Aunt Jessie at the ranch. Maybe just as much ickiness for everybody else, for the normal person. We just know about their ickiness.
Mm-hmm.
They had a way of looking at the world that maybe many don't. Or maybe they keep their opinions that they look at the world the same way to themselves. I think their quote-unquote charitable contributions, as we talked about earlier, helped them gain the acceptance they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Right.
They would have the girls, I remember Miss Jessie or Aunt Jessie, write letters to the service members and boys.
Right.
You know, that really endeared the town to her and to the girls at the brothel, because they were sending gifts and stuff to the boys serving in World War I.
Right.
That wasn't easy. Not that any war is easy to fight in, but a lot of trench warfare. You know, I mean, my great-great-grandfather, Nanny's actually the one we talked about in part one, her dad would be a casualty of that war, but years later, because of the gas, the chemical warfare.
Yeah.
So, you know, not an easy war at all.
Right.
So it's hard to believe, though, that with these hypocritical politicians involved, more didn't try to come to their aid just because they would be afraid of something coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really afraid of it going to the state legislature, what's going to come out, what's going to happen. Hey, because it's going to throw the state of Texas government into turmoil.
Absolutely.
Because there was Dems and Reps, Democrats and Republicans both going out there.
Yep.
They found some common ground. Maybe this will be me. I don't know.
High-fiving each other in the hallways, you mean?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. Also, I mean, it just seems like she would have called in some favors again. Yeah. Maybe she had no favors. Maybe she did, and we just don't know about it.
Or maybe she was just tired of working.
So, and we kind of talked about this at lunch. There's a lot of vitriol and racism from all the main characters. Those pro-Chicken Ranch and those anti-Chicken Ranch. So this is one reason that when I meet someone, I assume you're an a-hole until you prove me wrong. So because almost everyone's an a-hole to someone, you know?
Yep.
So, anything you want to add?
No. I think we kind of covered a lot of it.
Yeah. And,
but you should definitely buy the book because there's a lot we didn't and could not cover.
Yeah. And if you're writing a book, just be careful where you put a word at. You know, if you're quoting somebody, I'll say that.
Yeah. Make sure you use quotations
if you're not using it.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And that's all we have for this episode. Thank you for joining us. You can find this book online at arcadiapublishing.com or wherever local books are sold. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.